You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. One of the distinctive characteristics of the electric power sector is that the amount of electricity that can be generated is relatively fixed over short periods of time, although demand for electricity fluctuates throughout the day. Developing technology to store electrical energy so it can be available to meet demand whenever needed would represent a major breakthrough in electricity distribution. Now, that's from the website energy.gov. The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection released a report earlier this year to assess the state's energy storage capacity and recommended increasing it by pairing solar energy with storage. Joining us on today's program to talk about it is David Althoff, who is Energy Program Director at Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection, and Jason Wirt, National Market Leader with Ritu Civil Engineering. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today. David Althoff, let me start with you. Now, I read that definition or that description of battery energy storage, but in layman's terms, what does it mean? What is it?
Thanks, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here today. Sure. I think energy storage is sort of like an overall term, and we tend to equate energy storage with batteries. You know, you basically charge a battery, and then you use the battery when you want to use the energy for the work that you want to do. And so ultimately, there are all kinds of energy storage across Pennsylvania, but with the ability to now recharge batteries, things that we use in our everyday lives, whether they be your iPad or your cell phone or maybe a cordless drill. And now we're essentially plugging in electric vehicles and driving them around for 200 or 300 miles. You know, battery technology has really gotten to a place where it can do a significant amount of work for us. So basically, that's what it is. It's the ability to take energy, store it when you want to take that energy and store it into a battery, and then being able to use it at the designated time when it's the best decision for you.
So, again, I may ask you some basic questions here, but I just want to make sure that everyone has some context here. Most people, we take electricity for granted. We walk into a room, we flip the light switch on, the lights come on. But that description that I just read from energy.gov, that electricity is kind of relatively fixed. What does that mean, and why is it important then to store electricity?
So with regards to some of our generation assets that we have, especially with regards to renewables, there are intermittent resources, solar and wind. And so ultimately, you're producing energy when the fuel is present, sunlight or airflow. And so at times, we've seen in other jurisdictions where there's sort of a high penetration of solar or wind, you have the ability to potentially at times produce more energy using that free fuel source than you can use at any point in time. And so that's why it's important to then store that energy and be able to use it, you know, when the sun goes down or the wind is not blowing. And so there's opportunities to basically take what is excess energy or even at sometimes low cost energy, store that energy such that you can use it at high demand times or high cost times. We actually have a long history of that here in Pennsylvania with regards to pumped hydro storage. And when demand is down during the night, essentially pumping water uphill into a reservoir, and then when demand is higher during the day, allowing that water to flow through draft tubes through hydro generation facilities and then produce energy.
So this is nothing new, except that you're looking at using solar as the method to store this energy.
I think it's nothing new from the standpoint of the ability to use energy storage to do work. What is new and interesting is that with the penetration of renewable energy technologies, which are intermittent, the ability to take that energy generation source, that clean energy generation source, maximize its potential and store that energy such that then you can use it at times when it is most advantageous for the grid, for yourself, in those types of situations.
Mm-hmm. So let me go to Jason Wirt. Jason, you are the national market leader, which I like your title, by the way, Ritu Civil Engineering. What is Ritu, or how's Ritu involved in this?
Scott, thank you for having us on today. So Ritu is a company headquartered in Pennsylvania. We're a civil engineering and construction firm, and renewables to us is a wide range of projects, but we're involved in helping folks implement solar, battery solutions, wind, renewable natural gas, sort of across a spectrum of industries, whether they be public, whether they be private. And there is a tremendous amount of interest, both from a cost-benefit standpoint and economic drivers, but also, environmental governance, sustainability, those type of applications. You see a wide range of interest.
When you say from a cost standpoint, let's start with that. Is this something that could save money in the long run?
Absolutely. Often joke, we don't get to do many green projects that aren't also the other color of green, right? Folks generally look for an economic benefit from renewables, and it is there today. There, it depends on the application, but there are many, many projects in Pennsylvania that are using both solar and battery or other forms of renewables coupled with battery that are very cost effective and can save millions of dollars. I'll give an example here in the State College area. The local wastewater treatment plant implemented solar plus storage for their facility. They were interested in the storage for resiliency. They need to be able to run the community wastewater plant during power outages. And the two of those combined will save them $10 million in electrical costs over the next 20 years.
Hmm. David, I, you know, what Jason was just describing, he described the plant in, or the facility, I should say, in State College. Now, that's small scale compared to what the state is looking at. How much money can the state save with this?
Well, I think it's really gets down to, wholesale power market prices and the ability to basically run as few units as possible. And so the ability to smooth out that load, to not have load, whereas load goes up and down during the day, but be able to supplement that through energy that is coming out of larger grid scale batteries, means that you don't have to turn on some of these more expensive peaker plants during high demand times during the day. Some of the outcomes of turning on some of those peaker plants is they tend to be some of the dirtier generation, so to speak. So it's a way for us to smooth out load, lower levels of air pollution. And, a lot of times those peaker plants are really near some of the areas that we're most concerned about with regards to environmental justice. So the ability to deploy these renewable assets, to be able to store all of the energy, the potential that they're able to deliver during the day or when the wind is blowing, and then be able to utilize that energy at times so as to not turn on other assets. That's the savings across the board for Pennsylvania, both from a dollars and cents standpoint and an environmental standpoint.
Is peaker a term that is widespread in the industry? That's not something that we hear very often.
Sure. Yeah. Peaker is basically like plants that you just turn on. You call on them when the power demand gets higher and higher and you need to add other generation essentially to the system in order to, when you turn on your light switch, that your lights come on. Electrical energy is essentially instantaneous. Everybody just takes for granted that when they turn on the light switch, the power is going to happen. That is based on predictive models, and you have to have enough generation out there, enough electrons pushing through the wires such that when you hit the light switch, the light comes on.
Okay, I'm going to, maybe this is an exaggeration or at least an extreme. In California, it seems to be in Western states most often, but California seems to be the place where it happens most often. Of course, it did happen in Texas earlier this year. But rolling blackouts during peak times, is that an example where there is not enough energy storage?
I think that's an example where there's not enough generation capacity to be able to deliver all of the energy needs at that point in time. And the grid operators essentially monitor that very closely. And ultimately, at times, they wind up having brownouts such that the entire grid does not crash. In other words, if there's not enough energy, things will begin to automatically trip off in order to save the entire system. That's sort of what we started to see happen in Texas. And so ultimately, you have to have all of these assets at your fingertips, and you need to be able to manage them. So therefore, the grid is balanced. And when I mean balanced from the standpoint of there's enough energy pushing out such that you're able to meet the need for what folks are using or what they desire at that time.
The report that we're talking about, some of the results today, report I mentioned in the introduction, the Pennsylvania Energy Storage Assessment Status, Barriers and Opportunities. David, how would you summarize that report?
Well, I think that what we attempted to do is we're looking, you know, into the future a little bit, and we're seeing that, you know, batteries, energy storage technologies are going to be something that is going to be deployed in our state, in our region to a greater degree. And so we wanted to give essentially what was a current landscape of energy storage, electrical energy storage in Pennsylvania. What are the potential opportunities and opportunities not only for deployment, but to make these batteries, to have the manufacturing presence to be able to supply the state and the region with regards to these electrical energy storage battery deployment opportunities. And so what are the potential financial benefits? What are the environmental benefits? And what things can we do from a policy or program standpoint to be able to support this build out of this technology and for Pennsylvania to take greater advantage of that? So we essentially put together a report which included recommendations. One of the recommendations was to convene this energy storage forum. And we convened that forum September 28th. It was a virtual forum. Our next meeting is December 7th, and we will have meetings quarterly in 2022. And mainly it's to sort of talk about what all do we need to do to be prepared and get the most out of this opportunity for Pennsylvania. We had about 100 stakeholders at the September 28th meeting, and we're hoping to have more. It reminds me a little of our Pennsylvania Solar Future initiative we did a couple of years ago. And some of the ideas are moving forward on what would an energy storage goal look like for Pennsylvania? How do we have a strategic plan to develop microgrids and put batteries at critical facilities? In other words, how do we keep the lights on in those times of turmoil? And working together with our regulators, PUC, PJM, the transmission operator, on making sure that we get the best value out of deploying these assets within our transmission and distribution grid.
Just for context, PJM?
PJM is the regional transmission operator. They provide the transmission services through the Mid-Atlantic region for all of those states.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple questions from listeners. Michael asks, now this is aside from solar energy, but Michael asks, what are the prospects for energy storage using large flywheels, which NASA has researched for storing energy on the moon? Is that Jason want to answer that one?
Yeah, I'll take that. So actually, Pennsylvania has had some operational flywheel storage facilities in southeastern PA for energy storage. It is a potential technology, along with, as an example, compressed air storage, where we compressed volumes of air with low-cost energy and then release that through a turbine during high periods. So some of these mechanical methods, like flywheels, like the compressed air, are what I would call a complementary technology to the batteries that we see a little bit more prevalently in the industry.
Okay, describe a flywheel. I mean, I have one pictured in my mind, but what are we talking about scale? How would it work?
So how they work in a sense is you take electricity, excess electricity that's at the moment, and you use it to spin a wheel, and the wheel has a weight associated with it. And so the momentum of the wheel continues to spin it, right? Think of like a merry-go-round at a playground, right? You know, you get it up to speed and you can keep it moving. And then when you need to withdraw that energy, you effectively slow down that flywheel, and you're converting that rotational energy into electricity again. So you're using the momentum of the device to store that energy, and then you're converting between mechanical and electrical methods there. Mm.
Let's talk to Tony in Lancaster. Tony, you're on Smart Talk.
Oh, hi. Thanks for letting me come on. This is really interesting, and it's really important. I have a 12-year-old son. Actually, he's 13 now, and I'm really concerned about climate change. So when the person there, I'm forgetting the name, but when the person there started mentioning the sources of energy and said renewable natural gas, I think it's really important to point out, and if he wants to contradict me, that's fine, but it's really important to find to point out that there really is no such thing as renewable natural gas, and that natural gas is methane, and that methane is an extremely potent greenhouse gas. So to me, that's more of an industry talking point than it's really disinformation that is dangerous at this point, because we only have 10 or less years to tackle climate change. And a lot of people are so confused.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, Tony, thank you very much for your call. David, I think he was referring to something you said a little bit earlier. You want to clarify that?
Sure. I'll just say that, the Energy Programs Office at DEP is also the Climate Office. And we just put out a 2021 Climate Action Plan, which sort of identifies pathways to get ourselves towards Governor Wolf's goal of 80% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. And there's all types of opportunities out there, renewable natural gas being one of them. We have lots of opportunities in Pennsylvania to better utilize opportunity fuels, as I call them, some of those coming from biodigesters or renewable natural gas. And so it is a part of the solution. It's not the solution. It's all of these things together, including renewable energy and potentially other technologies, carbon capture and sequestration, using our nuclear resources, all of it together. So understand and respect your opinion on that. I would direct you towards our climate action plan to see what pathways exist for us to try to do everything that we can to solve the climate crisis. So we're on your side on that, and we're looking to evaluate and deploy all of these technologies in Pennsylvania to the betterment of our environment.
David, I know where Tony's coming from, because natural gas as a fossil fuel, it doesn't sound like it's something that's renewable. When you say that, I don't know, what was the word you used, the digestible or?
Biodigesters.
How's that work?
We're taking organic waste, whether that be manure from animal farms or food waste, and we're in an anaerobic environment. We are essentially breaking that down and pulling the methane off of those fuels that are essentially going to exist in our society. We're going to need to eat, and we're going to have animals and dairy. And so those things we want to essentially put back into that carbon cycle and make a greater use of those fuels that we have at our fingertips in all of our communities. And if we can supplement the infrastructure that we already have now and the gas delivery systems that we already have now by replacing some of that natural gas with renewable natural gas, that's definitely an opportunity that we discuss in our climate action plan.
Let's take a phone call from Lane in Lancaster. Lane, you're on Smart Talk.
Yes, thank you for having me. I wanted to ask, is one of the ultimate goals of battery electric storage on a utility scale meant to replace peaker plants?
Yeah, that is really one of those major goals, is to look at large-scale storage where we can drop load that would be – or satisfy load within the electrical grid from an energy storage. So as David mentioned earlier, we're looking to take excess generation, whether that be from solar or wind or other form of renewable source, and store it, so that when our communities are reaching their sort of peak loads, or whether that be from weather, whether we have heat and we have large air conditioning load that's coming on, but we're, instead of turning on a carbon-based power generation facility, we then empty those batteries back into the grid, thereby sort of smoothing that out. We can let traditional generation run more at a constant rate and not have the ups and downs that are associated with sort of our chaotic lives and businesses and the effects of weather, smooth those out.
Jason, I'm looking for kind of an explanation as to what kind of batteries we're talking about.
Well, there are many kinds. I would say that the most commonly deployed right now are lithium batteries. And this is, you know, I use this example. It's no different than what we're using in our cell phones, our iPads, or any of those type of devices that we carry around. They're a lithium-based chemistry. The industry continues to evolve, though. So there's lithium iron phosphate batteries. There's nickel batteries. There's zinc batteries. You know, I think a lot of folks maybe think of the old lead acid sort of deep storage batteries. Really, where battery energy storage is trying to move is for speed, is that we need to have devices that very quickly can transfer that energy to the grid so that we're able to use it most effectively and keep the system in balance, as sort of David was mentioning.
All right. So when you're talking about lithium batteries, you know, one of the questions that arises when we're talking about electric vehicles, for example, is the life of those batteries and what to do after they're of no use anymore. Have we solved that problem?
There's work being done to solve that problem. I mean, it's going to be part of the equation long term for renewables and for climate. We need technologies to recycle and harvest that lithium. There's good work being done. Department of Energy and others are endorsing and investing in some of the technologies for this. But we need a commercialization of the ability to sort of harvest those rare elements back from the uses we have. A typical utility scale battery is going to have between 12 and 15 years of life. So it's not very short duration, but when we look at the decades long infrastructure planning that we do as society, we certainly need to have some recapture and reuse of those materials.
I mean, that is an environmental issue right now.
It certainly is. I mean, make no mistake that many of these elements that we use in our renewable systems require heavy industry to get, whether that be mining or some sort of smelting and work to transform those elements into our uses. It is part of the equation, and it's a necessary. It's technology we need to invest in to really complete the loop for these systems.
We have an email from Donovan, wants to know, if we installed solar panels on every house and business roof, where it makes the most sense, he says, along with storage batteries in every building, could these backup batteries supply enough energy to the network for the peak usage times? Who wants to take that one?
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. There's been some studies done by NREL, the Million Solar Roofs program, for instance, that basically says that you know, if we took all of our roof space and put solar on our roof space and back that up with batteries, that you know, we could fulfill our energy needs. Now, is that feasible? Probably not. But I think siting and location on where these things make the most and best sense, a sort of a good, better, best scenario in each community, is really a smart thing to do. I think that's part of what we're really seeing right now with the conversation around solar is you know, how to appropriately site these large energy generation plants, these solar plants. And on top of that, you know, adding batteries to those plants. What we see right now with regards to the things that are in the queue with regards to determining feasibility is that about a quarter of them are co-located with energy storage projects. And I think the interesting thing about energy storage projects is they don't take up much room. Essentially, they're a container that contains batteries, a large sort of shipping container that contains batteries, makes no noise. You know, they're just basically co-located or placed on the site. So they're really, it's really easy to do if you have the technology. when placing it next to any of these renewable solar arrays.
Okay, so let's talk about those solar arrays. You were just talking about batteries not taking up a lot of room. The recommendation in the Pennsylvania Energy Storage Assessment Status report said that this, you know, the idea would, it's a recommendation to pair grid-scale solar arrays with battery storage. You just talked about that. What is grid-scale solar arrays? Give me an idea of how large that is.
Yeah, grid scale is usually 5 megawatts or larger. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, a location that's 20 acres, let's say. So this is not something you're necessarily putting on your rooftop at your business or even on a warehouse, so to speak. These are large facilities that are providing power to the grid, so to speak. It's not necessarily on the roof of your home, or it's not sort of net metered at your business. There's a term whereby you're basically utilizing all the power off the grid for your own personal property, your own personal use, whether that be your business or industry or whatever that may be.
So under this plan, how many of these solar arrays are we talking about throughout the state?
Well, currently right now, as I mentioned, you know, in the queue, there's about 16 gigawatts of solar being planned for in the queue. Now, PJM, we had talked about them before, they're the regional transmission operator. They essentially do a feasibility analysis on planned projects to see whether the transmission grid will be able to handle the additional load at that location where they're building the project. There's also permitting. There's also some financial agreements that happen. So not every one of those projects will happen, but there are literally hundreds of projects right now in the queue being evaluated that adds up to about 16,000 megawatts. That's what 16 gigawatts is. And that's a tremendous amount of solar that's currently being planned for. And as I said, about a quarter of that has energy storage co-located with it. So this is looking into the future, into the next 2 to 5 years. A number of these facilities are likely to be built, and they're likely to be built with energy storage. How do we take advantage of that as Pennsylvania standpoint? And how do we get on board with not only making sure that we site them correctly, but how do we make the parts and pieces? How do we manufacture, get in that manufacturing game with regards to energy storage and have Pennsylvania benefit from it from a jobs perspective?
Realistically, what kind of time frame are we looking at?
I think that, you know, going forward, you know, this is the decade, right? From here to 2030, things are really going to start to get built. We're going to be able to evaluate the benefits of this. You talked earlier about additional research and development that's going to happen. We're going to see whether these zinc air batteries, these iron air batteries, these alternate chemistry batteries can really take a foothold. How long can they store this power for, and how much can they deliver when called upon? So this is the time. This is going to be the decade for us to really figure this out in order to move forward and really bite into this climate goal.
Let's take a phone call from James in Chester County. James, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question. In Northern Wales, they have a facility that I'm not going to attempt to pronounce in the native tongue, but it's called Electric Mountain by many. It's like essentially a giant reservoir that runs up and down through a turbine system in a mountain that they use to kind of famously power the grid when every Brit turned on their tea kettle at commercial time, the BBC. Seems like besides the construction of such a grid, that it would be a good solution for America. We have a lot of mountain towns and, you know, through Appalachia, but also in the Mountain West that have exploded mountains that are already collecting water.
Hmm. Let me get to Jason. Jason, what about that? Is that an option?
Totally viable, and actually happy to say that Pennsylvania has probably been doing that for well over, I'd say we're going into 60 years, 60, 70 years, that we have done pumped hydro for electrical generation. When you look at the, you know, as an example, the lower Susquehanna River, before we get into Maryland, there are multiple facilities that we, you know, operators pump water from the Susquehanna River during low flow or low electricity timeframes, low cost, and then they allow that water to come back down through a turbine. It's, you know, we refer to it as pumped hydro, and that's a great technology. I think Pennsylvania can look to expand those technologies as a complementary to the things we're talking about.
Hmm. Here's one from John. It says, while we all need to participate in reducing emissions, Pennsylvania doesn't have its own atmosphere. While Americans cannot force other countries to control their emissions, I believe we need to have a national solution to solve this instead of leaving it up to individual states. Isn't this the United States of America? David, point he's making, is this something that the federal government that is being looked at on a national scale, or is it up to each individual state like Pennsylvania?
For sure. I mean, we really like being involved in that national conversation, and you know, and personally, I think we have to have that national conversation. But until then, you know, states have always been the engine of ingenuity and innovation. And so the things that we do matter. Pennsylvania is a big state. The changes that we make and the things that we do to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions matter not only to the United States, but also the world. Secretary McDonnell at DEP says that, you know, we can't do it without the rest of the world, but they can't do it without us, too. So, we want to do what benefits Pennsylvania. We want to get in the game, and we want to be able to take part in deploying these technologies of tomorrow and having a hand in that economic development piece of that.
Mm. I want to thank both our guests for being with us today. David Althoff is Energy Program Director at the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, and Jason Wirt is National Market Leader with Ritu Civil Engineering. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.